Hey, if you have your Bibles, I would encourage you to open them to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. In a pew Bible, you'd find that on page 1171. And there is a YouVersion live event for this. So if you brought your smartphone and you have YouVersion on it, you can load that up and just search for a live event in Kerwinsville, and there it'll be. You can follow along that way. Page 1175 in a pew Bible, 1 Thessalonians 5 is where we'll be in a short time. If you know me, you know that I love the Beatles. I am a big Beatles fan, and man, they simply wrote and performed really good songs, and they're fun to listen to, good melodies, good harmonies, good stuff there. But being a Beatles fan has not been without controversy through the years. I can remember when I was a really little kid, John Lennon said something very foolish. I don't know, he was probably 20 years old when he said it. Man, everybody just wanted, that's probably the first albums that were burned. Maybe at that time that happened. And knowing that Beatles were controversial, when I candidated here at Kerwinsville Alliance 19 years ago, I didn't want to come here because I loved the church I was in. And I just had a meeting with the elders in the church I was in a few weeks earlier, and you know, we were talking about some difficulty we've been through, and my elders said to me, "Pastor Steve, we love you so much. We want you to stay here long enough that you can retire from this church." And so things were great in my last church, and then I get this call to come to Kerwinsville and candidate, and I'm like, I don't want to leave where I am. And so, honestly, and this is true confession, I tried to sabotage it. And in my candidacy, I said, I know there's a big controversy between hymns and choruses, and for my money, you could get rid of all of them and just play Beatles songs because that's the kind of music I like. Wow! Wow! And I thought for sure, well, the Board of Ministries will say, we don't want that guy. But praise God, they didn't say that. And I am so thankful that I'm here at Kerwinsville Alliance. So thankful for 19 years here. But you know, you think about it, I'm sure that comment about the Beatles did raise an eyebrow. In fact, when I said that in the early service, John Peters nodded emphatically. It sure did, buddy. You almost didn't come here, I think is what he was saying. Part of the controversy about the Beatles was that some of their songs sounded like they were being sung about drugs. And I'll bet they were. I'll bet they were, you know? They admitted to using drugs. They were arrested for that. Yeah, wouldn't you sing about that? One of those songs, though, that was pointed at as being about drugs was a song called With a Little Help from My Friends. In fact, Spiro Agnew, who was then Vice President of the United States of America, called that song, With a Little Help from My Friends, a tribute to the power of illegal drugs. That was before Agnew himself had to resign over taking bribes and also tax evasion, so he wasn't exactly a pillar of personal purity, was he? A tribute to the power of illegal drugs. Perhaps it was. But I like to think of it as being a tribute to the power of friendship. Because I want to say to you this, that friends, I'm talking about human friends, can help you in a way that no drug ever could. Friends can bring a richness to your life that no pharmacist ever could hope to. Friends can bring meaning to your existence that no bottle, glass, pipe, syringe could ever hope to bring to your existence. Friends can make your life meaningful, make your life whole, make your life complete. And if you have friends that are only your friends if alcohol or other drugs are involved, then I might begin to question the depth of that friendship. I would begin to question that. We each need real friends. In fact, I would say to you, we will struggle intensely and unnecessarily if we don't have real friends. And the passage we're going to talk about today doesn't really talk about friends at all. But what it addresses is some counsel that you cannot really hope to implement unless you have real friends in your life. Real Christian friends who really love you and whom you can really trust. So we're just going to read two verses. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 14 and 15. It says, "And I urge you, brothers and sisters, warn those who are idle and disruptive, encourage the disheartened, help the weak, be patient with everyone, make sure that nobody pays back wrong for wrong, but always strive to do what is good for each other and for everyone else." Now, when I think about that and I look at that text, I realize there are times when you need friends to do the kinds of things that are instructed in that text. Do you see them? The first one I see is I need friends when I am not tracking with the plan, explicitly with God's plan. If I am not online, if I am not in line, rather, with what God has in mind, then we'll look at verse 14. It says, warn those who are idle and disruptive. And you're thinking, idle and disruptive, what does that have to do with being on track with God or not being on track with God? I'm not really sure. Those two words, idle and disruptive, they're one word in the Greek. It's the only place in the New Testament that that word appears. And it's translated, maybe in your translation, differently. It might be translated unruly or uncooperative or irresponsible or freeloading or disorderly. However you slice it, it still comes up kind of the same way. These are people who are not really in line with what God is trying to do, what God's plan is. They are unruly. They are uninterested. They are a distraction. They are distracted. They're uncooperative. Man, you know what they sound like? They sound like me and my buddies in ninth grade English lit class. That's what they sound like. You know, they're the trouble causers. Do you remember that bunch in school? They were the bunch that were irresponsible, disruptive. The teacher's trying to teach something really important, like why E.E. Cummings never used an uppercase letter in his life. And they're sitting in the back thinking, oh, this is just so crazy. And they're distracting from what the teacher wants to do. And there's a group of students who are disturbed by that because these students really care about their education. But those kids in the back, they're trouble. Now, I can remember I was one of those kids. And I probably have told you before about Mrs. Mercatoris. It was in ninth grade. Wow, what a name that is. Esther Mercatoris. How about it? Esther Mercatoris was my teacher. And she said to me, Steve, I want you to stay after class today. Didn't bother me a lick. I was used to staying after class. And so I stayed, and she said to me words that no other teacher had ever said to me. She said, Steve, I want to talk to you. You are a smart kid, and you have a lot of personality. You have charisma. But you also have the ability to make me hate you. I have to resist every day in this classroom not hating you. And I'm not alone. There will be other people that will hate you because of the disruption you are, because of the problem that you are. They will hate you. And you have the choice. You can go on this way, or you can turn around and you can cooperate. It's really up to you. It was a transformational moment in my life. You know, about 5 years ago, I Googled Esther Mercatoris. Believe it or not, there's only one of her. I found her name in a church bulletin of a church down near Philadelphia. And so I picked up the phone. I called the church. I talked to the secretary. Do you have a parishioner named Esther Mercatoris? She says, I don't think I can tell you that. Because, you know, she's preserving Esther's, Mrs. Mercatoris' privacy. And I said, well, she's in your bulletin. She said, well, then you know that. She's being very careful. And I said, listen, I am an old student of hers, and I want to write her a thank you letter. You probably won't give me her address, will you? No, I will not. Okay, I'm going to write this letter, and I'm going to address it to your church, and I'm not going to seal it. And you're the secretary. You'll get it. Open it up and read it and see if it's okay to give to her. If it is, do it. And in that letter, I apologized for what a jerk I was, and I thanked her for that speech. She wrote back to me. She said, you know, honestly, I didn't really blame you. We were studying such stupid stuff in ninth grade English lit class. Thank God for people like Esther Mercatoris. She wasn't just a teacher at that moment. She was a friend. And I need a little help from my friends who are willing to warn me when my attitude is going to take me to a bad place. When we're not tracking with the plan, we need a little help. When we're discouraged, we need a little help. I see that in the phrase, encourage the disheartened in verse 14. And we were talking about this actually this Wednesday night in our small group. We're studying Philippians. We're together. It's a small group of maybe, I don't know, there are maybe 10 of us there. And as we were talking together, I said to them, where do you go when you are discouraged? Who do you go to when you are discouraged? And it was funny. You know, these are all adults in a small group, but they answered it just like my kids used to answer during daily devotions, you know. So, Timmy, what's the answer to the question that Mom has just read? God. You know, because 4 out of 5 times in daily devotions, the answer is God, right? And so here I am in a small group on Wednesday night. Where do you go when you're discouraged? To God, and that is the right answer. But I said, where else do you go? Is there anyone with skin on that you can go to when you're discouraged? Do you have that person? Could be your wife, could be your husband. Could be a friend in a small group that you have. It might be the person that you sit next to in church on Sunday mornings. It could be a family member. It could be a neighbor. But when you're discouraged, you need a little help from a friend. You need to go to them. Okay, so I need a little help from a friend when I'm not tracking with the plan. I need a little help from a friend when I'm discouraged. I need a little help from a friend when life is getting hard and I feel kind of overwhelmed. Look in verse 14, and you see the phrase there, help the weak. Who are the weak? The old King James translates that in a very entertaining way. It says, help the feeble-minded, you know? Wow, nobody wants to be the feeble-minded. And I have a feeling that the phrase feeble-minded or that term means something today that maybe it didn't mean 400 years ago when the King James was translated. Most linguists, when they look at that word today, they say that it means the fretful, the worried, the faint-hearted. And what does it say here? Help them. So there are times when I am worried or I am fretful or I'm faint-hearted that I need help. But frankly, I'm a guy. I never worry. Right, guys? Amen. Yeah, there's one other liar here. Good. Good. That's good. Yeah. Now, really, men and women alike, nobody likes to think of themselves as a worrywart. No one wants to even indulge this perspective that I could be someone who would ever worry about things or fret or be weak in that regard. I'm not weak, but you should indulge that thought. Because every person here is somewhat prone to worry, even fretting, even despair. If you don't feel like, I never worry about anything, wait till your son gets his driver's license. Okay? And if you're like, I'm not going to worry about that, wait till that boy comes to pick up your daughter on that Harley Davidson. Wow. Yeah. Or worse yet, that Suzuki Hayabusa. Wow. Even Ben Roethlisberger has trouble surviving those wrecks on that thing, right? Yeah. You see, there are times like that when you're going through something that is worrisome in your life, and it might be a little more every day than that. Like, I'm just having so much trouble with my finances right now. Or at work, man, people are making me crazy at work. Or the doctor called and I need further tests. And those kinds of things, it is good to have a friend to go with, just to be with sometimes. And it's good sometimes to talk about those things with a friend. It is good to pray about those things with a friend. When your life gets hard, you need a little help from a friend. We need help from a friend when we're not tracking with God, when we're discouraged, when we're overwhelmed, and we need help from a friend when we are struggling to forgive someone else. I say that because of the whole words of verse 15. In verse 15, it says, make sure that nobody pays back wrong for wrong. In other words, I'm holding a grudge and I am going to get even. Make sure they don't do that. Always instead, strive to do what is good for each other and for everyone else. Forgiveness. Are you good at holding a grudge? My wife has said these words to me, not recently, but in years past, more than once. I don't know anyone else who can hold a grudge as good as you, Steve Shields. Wow. You haven't said that to me in years, buddy. Isn't it cool how cool God is, huh? That's a good thing. You know what she was doing? Telling me those words, she was being my friend. Because holding a grudge is hazardous to your health. Forgiveness is something that is absolutely essential to your spiritual health, to your emotional health, and even, healthcare professionals will tell you, to your physical health. Rob Reimer, who does the soul care events that I have been to, notes that David Seaman, who spent decades counseling perhaps thousands of different people, says this. Listen to this statistic. He says 90% of the problems he dealt with in counseling come from one of two things. Either people needed forgiveness or they needed to extend forgiveness. 90%. What are the other 10%? 9 out of 10 of you who feel like something's wrong in your soul, who feel like something's wrong in your spirit, who feel emotionally... Seaman says there's a 9 out of 10 chance that that has to do with forgiveness. Either receiving it yourself or passing it on to someone else. When we struggle to forgive, wow, we need a little help from our friends, from a friend who might say to you, you know, buddy, I don't know anyone that can hold a grudge any better than you can. Wow. Wow, that was a gutsy thing for a wife to say. Gutsy thing. You know, in verse 15, it says in the NIV, see that no one repays wrong for wrong. Other translations say it this way, evil for evil. I like that because it has more of a punch, right? Evil for evil. When our children were very small, they did what every child does whenever they were in trouble. Like, why did you hit your sister? Tim would say, she hit me first, right? And that's how all kids do it. Kids are like that. We as adults, we're never like that, are we? We're just a little more clever maybe, huh? Yeah. When Laurel, because Laurel did devotions with the kids and read Bible stories to them, read the Bible to them, did those devotional things with them regularly. And because our kids were in Sunday school week after week after week, year after year, and because our kids were at kids' time and every other kids' thing that we had going in our church at the time and youth group, and because our kids faithfully found themselves at Mahaffey Camp having a blast and learning about the Bible, they knew the Bible. I mean, Tim and Esther just knew the Bible. And they knew about this verse, do not repay evil for evil. And so when Tim was in trouble for hitting Esther and he did what every other kid did, she hit me first, Mom would look at her, and I remember one of the first times I heard Laurel do it, I thought, whoa, that was smart. That was smart. She hit me first. Really, Tim, are you repaying evil for evil? Wow. Because now, Tim, you're not just in trouble for hitting your sister, you're in trouble for repaying evil for evil. Boy, don't ever say that again. I don't think that poor boy ever said that again, you know? Right? Right? He needed a little help from a friend who could help him not hold grudges. When we repay evil for evil, that's always wrong. It's always bad. And we need friends who will encourage us instead to forgive. Now, as I consider this reality, I realize we need to be kind of selective about the kind of friends we pick, because there are only a certain kind of friends who will actually give you a little help along the way. And I just want to give you maybe two characteristics of friends that really kind of fit with this. The first one is friends you can trust. Now, I may not be meaning what you think I'm meaning when I say friends you can trust. Because many of us, when we think of friends we can trust, we think of those who would never say anything that would hurt us. Oh, I can trust Willis because Willis never says anything that makes me feel bad. That is not what I am suggesting. A friend who will never say anything that makes you feel bad is probably not a real friend. Because trustworthy friends are honest friends. And they're willing to speak the truth in love to help you. In this passage, the first thing that's mentioned is that we need to be warned. Look at verse 14, the very first phrase. And we urge you, brothers and sisters, warn those who are idle and disruptive. So when I see someone being idle and disruptive, part of my responsibility toward them is to honestly speak to them about that. And if I have a friend whom I trust, if I have a friend that I can trust and I know he's honest, then he can speak to me about that sometimes gently and sometimes even severely. He can speak to me about that. So find friends that you can trust and build relationships that are founded in trust so you can have a strong relationship. Maybe more basically than friends you can trust, it needs to be friends who know Jesus. You know, this book is being written to a group of Christians who get together regularly and who share in their lives together regularly. And so when he says, do this with one another, he is talking to people who consider themselves brothers and sisters in the faith. It's church family. As time goes by, you will realize, if you have not already realized, more and more clearly, the best friends you have are not necessarily those that you do fun things with. Fun things. Do you hear what I'm saying? You may have friends that you watch football with. We watch football together every Monday night. That's just a tradition. These are my friends that I watch football with. But they may not be your best friends if that's all that happens there. Or it may be your friend that you always shop with. We always do Black Friday together. She is my best friend, and she may be a great friend for Black Friday shopping because she will punch someone out so that you can get that big screen TV. Okay? But deep friendship doesn't come because you both like to shop, right? Your best friend may be people who hunt with you, but deepness of friendship does not come sitting in a tree stand across the field from the guy standing under the other tree. As time goes by, you will recognize, if you haven't already recognized it, that the best friends are the ones who share your values. Do you understand that? They value the same things you value. Now, I want you to think about this for a moment. I want you to think about high school, okay? Can you do that? Oh boy, I'm just thinking of Mrs. Mercatoris. I got to get that out of my brain. Think of the very best friend that you had in high school that you're no longer friends with. You got a face or two in mind? This person was a really good friend of mine in high school, but you know, within 2 or 3 years of graduation, we weren't friends at all. Even though we live in the same town. Or maybe not. Or think of it in college terms. Like, this was my good friend in college, but you know, when we graduated, we weren't friends at all. Now, there could be a lot of different reasons that that happened. A lot of different reasons that that friendship kind of, you drifted apart. But I'd like to posit a suggestion to you. I would like to say that maybe the reason your friendship died is because you did not value the same things. Huh. You know, maybe they valued getting rich and you valued family. Or maybe they valued getting stoned and you valued hard work. Or maybe they valued hooking up with everybody and you valued marriage. The best friends that you have and will ever have are the friends who share your values. Those friendships will endure. Those friendships will be there. And so when you're thinking about this message of, you know, getting a little help from your friends, choose friends you can trust. Choose friends that value the same things that you value. Friends who know Jesus personally and have that relationship with Him. Now, I want to think about how do we make the most of those kinds of friendships? And I want you to look at verse 14 again. I want you to look at the phrase that says, warn those who are idle and disruptive. And when I look at that phrase, seeing those words, I realize warnings. Okay, I want to be the kind of person who embraces warnings. So that when a friend comes to me and says, Steve, and I have friends who do this, Steve, I kind of saw this thing that you said or heard, that thing you said the other day. What are you thinking there? And what they're doing is they're saying to me, I think maybe you're on the wrong path here in what you're thinking. I just want to give you a warning about that. And receiving those warnings, embracing warnings, that doesn't come natural to anyone. There's no one who is out there to find people to criticize them unless there's something seriously wrong with you. Most of us have an aversion to criticism, but failing to embrace warnings puts us in peril. I like that word, peril. It puts us in peril. Years ago, our family vacationed with another family at the beach. Kids were little. They might have been like 10, 12, that age. Maybe a little younger than that, some of them. They loved being out in the waves, and it was kind of a family-friendly place. We could just let them go. And man, they had fun. They had those boogie boards, and they were doing all the stuff that kids love to do. And generally, it was very safe. At the beach, though, when you got out of your car, there was flags of different colors there. And some of those flags, depending on the color they were warning flags. And as you walked onto the beach from the parking lot, you saw the sign, if the warning flag is flying, do not go into water. The undertow is strong and will pull you under. Capital letters. Okay? Now, you can imagine in that diverse group of ages and families, we didn't all respond to the warning flags in the same way. There were some who said, okay, I don't know too much about undertow, but I know how to read. And I will not get into the water. None of us will when the warning flag is out. And then there were those who said, who do they think they are telling me when I can and cannot get in the water? They can take those flags and, well, you know the rest of the story, right? Right? That was the perspective of a couple of the kids. Fortunately, the wisdom of the adults prevailed. And we embraced those warnings. Warnings are generally beneficial to us. To make the most of your friendships, then embrace the warning that a true friend gives you. Second, embrace his encouragement or her encouragement. There's a phrase in verse 14, encourage the disheartened. And so be an encourager to others. Look at someone else and say, I'm going to encourage them, you know? I was out hunting with my 7mm08. Behind Eric and Kay's new house in the field behind there, hunting for groundhogs. And so I got one. And I thought, I'm going to put that on a PowerPoint and show it to you this morning, but my wife warned me against that. Aren't you glad? But instead, I texted a picture to Eric. I texted a really nice picture to him. Of 7mm08, that'll put a hole in a groundhog big enough that you can go ahead and drive whatever you need to through that groundhog. Hey, Eric, look at this. I got this right behind your house. And he texted me back. Nice shooting. Nice shooting. That's encouragement. Eric doesn't know this. I felt great. Nice shooting. I like that. And I wasn't even disheartened to begin with. I was feeling pretty good to begin with. When I got that, wow. And so I texted that to my wife and said, look, Eric says I'm a good shot. See that? Nice shooting. Nice shooting. To make the most of your friendships, you need to do what Eric did, but not just about hobbies. You need to do that about things like, you're a good mom. I really see what a great mom you are. The way you take care of those kids, wow. It's fantastic. Or, hey, I saw what you put on Facebook. And, you know, sometimes I get on Facebook and I just want to pull my hair out. But it seems every time you put something on there that really has meaning and encourages people. That's great. Or, hey, it is really good to see you in church week after week. I know it's hard with your work schedule, but you're so faithful. It inspires me. Good job. Or, I really admire how you care for your family and how you work hard 50-some hours a week to provide for them. Wow, that's awesome. Or, you're a really good small group leader. You're a lot better than Pastor Steve could ever hope to be. Whatever encouragement you can give, be an encourager and also receive encouragement from others. Think about this for a moment. If God commands us to encourage one another, then we should do that, and we should also receive the encouragement that others give us. There were years in my life when someone would encourage me about something, and I would kind of brush it off. I felt like that was a Christian thing to do. Oh, no, not me, not me. Don't shrug it off. If God told someone to encourage you and you shrug it off, it's kind of like if the doctor told the pharmacist to give you this medication for your blood pressure and you don't take it. Why would you not do that? Now, don't let it give you a big head, right? But receive it. Let encouragement soak in. And let God use it to change you even more. It does your heart good. If you want to get the most from your friendships, embrace encouragement. Embrace warnings, embrace encouragement. How about this? Embrace your friend's strength. What are you talking about, Pastor Steve? I'm talking about verse 14. Help the weak. Help the weak. Someone wants to help you, embrace that help. There's a show used to be on. This is how little I watch network television. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Is that still on? A couple of you are nodding. Yeah. Everybody watched that for a while. Remember that? I watched that maybe half a dozen episodes or if that many. I can remember they had three ways that you could get help in that show. Do you remember it? One of the ways was you could, you know, narrow it down a little bit. So there were four options, A, B, C, and D, and they'd throw out like B and D. Now you got A and C. That makes it easier. Another way they would pull the audience, like, what do you guys think? You know, and the audience would pull. But the best way by far was to phone a friend. You know? If the question is maybe about, I don't know, outdoor stuff and the elk herd in Pennsylvania, I'm going to call Josh Thatchick. He used to work with that. You know? I'm going to phone a friend. If the question is about sewing, I'll call my wife. You know? Whatever the question's about, I'm going to find the right person to get a hold of. I'm going to phone a friend. It was a great idea because sometimes your friend knows things you don't know. Did you hear that sentence? Sometimes your friend knows things you don't know. All of us have strengths and weaknesses. I am strong in some ways that you are weak, but guess what? You are strong in some ways that I am weak. We have that relationship where we can embrace the other friend's strength. It takes a little humility to do that. But if we can do that when we are not strong, when we are struggling, we can get the most from our friendships. Embrace the warnings, embrace the encouragement, embrace the other friend's strengths. This is a hard one. Embrace correction. And I don't like this one, personally. But there it is in verse 15. Make sure that nobody pays back wrong for wrong. Do you have a friend who will tell you what Laurel told our kids? Esther hit me first. Oh, So you're paying back evil for evil then. Do you have a friend that will call you out on things that you do that aren't right? Is there someone in your life like that? I have friends like that. And usually, the one who does it the best, usually I'll say something, because I don't know if you've noticed this about me or not, but I'm a bit of an extrovert, and I'm also a little bit verbal. So I'll just be rattling my gums there saying something, and my friend who will call me out is sitting across the table, and he'll say, and I'm to the point now where I recognize his laugh. Uh-oh. What are you laughing at? Well, Steve, do you think that's the best way to respond? Thank you, friend, for calling me out. Thank you for not allowing me to go along this bad path. I've talked to a number of people who've had friends who loved them enough to do that, to correct them, and they broke off the relationship. You know? Well, you know, I just don't like him anymore. You know, one time I was having trouble with this, and he told me that I was wrong, and I don't like that anymore. He were wrong. Don't do that. Don't break off that relationship. If you want to get the most from your friendships, then you need to value your friends who will tell you when you're wrong. You need to embrace the correction. Now, whenever I talk about friendship, I realize there are some of us that struggle to have friends. I mean, you can't talk about the things I've been talking about here without realizing there are probably people in a group this size who are like, man, I just don't have very many friends. And I understand that's hard. It's really hard sometimes when you're a teen. And all I can say to you is keep unplugging and keep reaching out and keep embracing and keep, don't allow yourself to become an island. Keep reaching out. I have this problem and it happens a lot. I feel like in friendships I have, I'm the only one that makes the call. Hey, you want to get together and have coffee? You know, why doesn't he ever call me? You know? And here's what I've come to, and it sounds funny. I don't mean it funny, I mean it really. The reason he never calls me is because he doesn't know how to have a friend. I do. Only because people have called me. Only because I have a wife. Laura used to say this to me from time to time. I mentioned it earlier. She would say, hey, why don't you call Dan? I think you and Dan need to have coffee. Because Laurel had her hand on the pulse of my heart and knew I needed to be with a friend. Not everybody has a friend like Laurel who will do that for them. And so a lot of people don't know how to have friends. Keep making the calls. Keep making the calls. It's hilarious. You know that Pastor George, who pastors Kerwin's Hill Christian Church, is one of my friends. And every now and then I used to text him one word. Coffee? ? And he would text back to me, I don't drink coffee. I knew he didn't drink coffee. And I would write back to him, it's not about the coffee. And then we'd go to McDonald's, and we would meet together. Want to know something funny? I got a text from George. It said, coffee? So if you're feeling like, yeah, Pastor Steve, I could use these kinds of friends because I need the warnings and I need the encouragement and I need the strength and sometimes I need the correction, get out your phone. Text them. Hit them on Facebook. Call them on the phone. Dial the rotary thing. Crank the thing on the side and say, Sarah, get me Wally down at the filling station. Whatever you need to do, make the call. Have the coffee. Be the friend. I want to pray that you can do that, okay? So as the musicians are coming, let's stand together. Would you bow your heart with me? Father in heaven, we are thankful for your word and how it speaks to us. And we recognize that this passage is telling us how to manage a relationship that is the church. But we see within it that there is good counsel here on how to make those relationships meaningful and effective in our lives. I mean, we could have people warning us all the time, but if we were not the kind of person that would embrace warnings, then that would be useless. And so we unite our hearts together and ask that you will make us individuals who will embrace warnings, who will embrace encouragement, who will embrace the strength of another when we are struggling, and who will even embrace correction. I pray, Father, that we could be that kind of individual so that we could be healthy. Now, God, you know everything, so you know there are people right here who have accepted some pretty lame substitutes for friendships. There are people here who maybe have accepted addictive substances. There are people here maybe who have accepted technology or cable news as their best friend. None of that will do. And so I pray that you will separate us from those things, that we will see in the heart of our hearts that nothing substitutes for flesh and blood. And may we embrace friendship. Help us to choose wisely when we choose our friends. Help us to choose individuals who will be honest with us. And help us to choose people who have the same values as us. And use them to help us be conformed to the likeness of your Son. And use us to help them in like manner. This is our prayer. And we pray it trusting you because of the Lord Jesus Christ. Amen.